The evening had been relatively quiet. That is, relatively quiet for a huge drilling rig floating in the North Sea. The rig was held in place by massive anchors resting on the seafloor, connected to the rig by vast lengths of anchor chain. Everything that came onto or off the rig, except for personnel, required a crane to move it from a supply boat to the rig or from the rig to a supply boat. Now, all of the supply boats that served our rig in the Scottish sector of the North Sea were owned and operated by the Danish company Maersk. The boats were longer than a football field and were specifically outfitted to handle the unpredictable currents and waves of the North Sea. They had reinforced hulls to manage heavy seas, and the wheelhouse had extra protection from wave wash that might come over the bow of the boat. There was even an extra wheelhouse facing the stern of the boat for the captain to back the boat up to a rig or a dock. Each boat had powerful engines and multiple rudders, as well as four thrusters down each side of the boat for extra maneuverability. Now, the rig on which I worked was no less technologically blessed, even though I'm talking about last century technology. Floating over 100 feet above the water's surface with almost 200 feet below the surface, the rig was as big as a city block and had three working decks, one on top of the other. On the main deck, there were three pedestal cranes. You might have seen this type of crane along the highway when crews are working to widen or repair roads on 294. There's three link belts, which I can operate. Except the cranes on the rig were two or three times larger than these. That's where I come in. As in another life, I was one of two crane operators on the rig, with each of us working alternating 12-hour shifts. The work on a drilling rig never stops, but rather is 24 hours of hard work for all concerned. Now, how I got to be a crane operator on a drilling rig in the North Sea is a story for another day. Just have to invite me back. I was about halfway through my shift when I noticed a single light in the stark distance, generally indicating a supply boat coming our way. As the sun began to rise, the wind started picking up, and by the time the boat arrived, the waves had built to a height that prevented the boat from tying up to the rig. On my way to our largest crane, I noticed four loads of what are called drill collars on the back deck of the boat, along with a number of shipping containers filled with other supplies. Now, just to clarify, drill collars are heavy lengths of pipe placed at the bottom of a string of drill pipe to add extra weight and drilling power. These were 5-inch drill collars, which weigh over 3/4 of a ton per 30-foot pipe, and 2.5 tons per load of three together. I give you this information as it's always important for a crane operator to know what he or she is lifting, how much it weighs, which block to use. You need to know where the load is and where the load will go after it is lifted. You need to understand if it is possible that the load will spin and how much the rig itself is rocking to and fro in the heavy seas that might cause the load to swing back and forth. As usual in the North Sea, all loads were brought out to our rig were bound together in manageable loads and already had wire rope slings on them. Further, the boat had its own crew that would hook up the load for the crane operator. The operator and the boat crew worked together to keep everyone safe. So the crane operator would lower a special hook hanging from a thick cable from one of the crane's blocks. It's important to lower the hook in a place where the boat crew was not standing between any two loads. After the load was attached, then the operator needed to center the hook over the load to prevent it from swinging into another load, the side of the boat, or the crew. Of course, all that required a good line of sight from the crane sitting another 50 feet above the main deck and on the very edge of the rig. After getting in my crane, I put on the radio headset to communicate with the captain while keeping my hands and feet on the operational controls. Now, just a quick lesson in operating a national hydraulic crane, just in case you ever find yourself in this situation. The swing control to make the entire crane rotate to the left or right is a rocker pedal under my left foot. Heel down, swings left, toe down, swings right. The boom control to make the large crane's boom go up or down is a small lever in my left hand. The controls for the two blocks are operated with my right hand. Pull the lever back, block comes up, push the lever forward, and the block goes down. The throttle is under my right foot and operates just like an accelerator in your car. Now, since all of the controls were hydraulic, one could operate all of the hand controls with just several fingers. A good operator, which in all humility I was, can lift the load, raise the boom, and swing the crane, or any combination of the above, all at the same time, and do all of that safely. It's much like playing the drums, which my grandson can do, but in all honesty, I have absolutely no idea where to start, and might actually hurt myself if I tried. I called a boat, identifying myself and our rig. The captain responded, identifying himself as Jan, and telling me it would not be possible to tie up to the rig. Now, Jan fights the heavy waves and the current, trying to determine how best to unload the boat safely. He finally calls back and asks me to swing my crane to the left and lower the boom. Lowering the boom moves the crane's hook away from the rig. I follow his instructions, but notice that my hook is in a blind spot as it disappears behind one of the large legs of the rig. He informs me that he will not be able to hold the boat in one spot for any length of time. Rather, he will keep drifting to my right in as much of a controlled manner as possible. We both know that there will be a short window to get these drill collars off, and yet we must be cautious to take into account the rise and fall of the boat's deck so as not to shock the crane with a load all of a sudden. By this time, there's a crowd of folks on the rig watching from the handrail to see what should prove to be a challenging dance between Jan and I. I have my crane in position and I watch Jan backing his boat toward the rig, and then it disappears behind the rig's leg. "Downhook," Jan says, and I continue in lowering until he tells me to stop. "Swing right, hook up, stop, swing right, hook up." I feel the crane take the load and Jan says, "All yours." Jan would then pilot his boat at full power away from the rig and get in position for another pass while my crew and I put the load on our deck. We repeat this process until the boat is completely unloaded. I thank Jan for all his help and compliment his driving skills. He thanks me and reminds me it was a team effort. I'm glad to have someone in the crane I can trust, he says. We both understood that each of us had the best equipment available to do what each of us was doing. And yet, despite all of this, the most important thing is that we had trust in each other. We had trust in each other's equipment. We had trust in each other's skills to use that equipment effectively and efficiently. We had trust in each other's crew to do their jobs safely. But perhaps more importantly, over the years I worked there, Jan and I trusted each other in a way that is hard to describe, and yet easy for me to remember because of all that we and our crews went through together. This element of trust is perhaps what the disciples and Jesus might have experienced on their journey. As we hear in Luke's gospel this morning, the disciples are clearly concerned about the fact that Jesus is not properly received in the village of the Samaritans and mull over the possible consequences. However, as Luke writes, Jesus has his face set on Jerusalem. It is clear that the disciples focus their attention on the here and now, on the immediate, the short term, while Jesus maintains his focus on all that is to come, not only his suffering and crucifixion, but also his burial, resurrection, and coming again. In the disciples' actions and statements, we hopefully see their limited vision, their on-again, off-again commitment to what it means to follow Jesus. In the actions and statements of Jesus, we also hopefully see and hear what it truly means to follow him, what it truly means to have a constant 24-hour focus on what it means to be a Christian, on what Jesus calls us to be as a Christian community, on what Jesus calls us to do as a Christian, on what Jesus calls us to do as a Christian community. As Richard Rohr, an American Franciscan priest and writer, has said, worship of Jesus is rather harmless and risk-free. Actually, following Jesus changes everything. Now, you might say, Clint, how am I supposed to live into this Christian calling alone? And I would respond, you are not. You see, on the drilling rig, there were a number of people, all with different skills and talents, all working together to accomplish a common goal. All of us trusted each other, all watching out for each other, all did the heavy lifting of their particular task, but all doing it together. And so it should be with us. Each of us have different skills and talents, different hopes and dreams for this Christian community. And yet Jesus calls all of us to use our individual expertise and ability and use them in community. Because the work of being a Christian is hard, it is difficult and challenging. It is work that cannot be accomplished alone. It is much like the woven wire rope slings and cables we use to pick up heavy loads in the North Sea. Now, those slings and cables were woven with small strands of wire, woven to make larger and larger pieces that are then woven to make one strong cable. Woven together in community, we will be able to do the heavy lifting Jesus calls us to do in this world. The heavy lifting of relieving the suffering of those without food, without shelter, without medical care. The heavy lifting of protecting those in peril solely because of the color of their skin, solely because of their country of origin, solely because of the lack of certain documents. The heavy lifting of destroying the foundations that support the routine use of hate, that support the systemic application of superiority, that support the preservation of inequality. This is the work we can only hope to accomplish as a Christian community, trusting in the call Jesus has for us, trusting in the hope of the Christian life and faith, trusting in each other that we will hold and support and sustain each other in this Christian work. Amen.